Bitcoin can actually help governance models and help us reach better versions of democracy or better versions of monarchy, or go back to better versions of monarchy. Because I believe that money before was always corruptible, even under the gold standard. And that gold standard ultimately led to the fiat standard, because gold had to be held by a third party. When you have to trust a third party to hold your gold, and in return you get pieces of paper, that was to stop the gold, the issuer as a treasury, to issue more paper than there was reserves, because no one went back to claim their gold at the same time. So humans are humans, and they always like to game the system if it can be gamed. And Bitcoin corrects that. Bitcoin is truth. And I'm an advocate for seeking for better governance models, and that can be better democracy, better monarchy.
This week, we are talking about the importance of sound money and private property rights in building cohesive societies. And we're joined by our special guest, Prince Philip of Serbia, who is aptly able to talk about some of these ideas and how Bitcoin can potentially unlock new ways for us to think about organizing and governing ourselves with a better monetary system to underpin everything. I'm Scott Deedles. I'm the CEO and founder of Block Rewards, and part of our mission in bringing Bitcoin to the workplace is helping people understand how we'll help them. The problem of broken money makes it really difficult for civilizations to function properly, and the prince has some really interesting ideas about how a Bitcoin future may fix more problems than you might think. I hope you enjoy. All right, welcome to another episode of the Block Reward Podcast. This week we are joined by a very special guest, Prince Philip of Serbia. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Scott. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I've been very much looking forward to this one. You're a very unique person in the Bitcoin space, and a lot of different questions to ask you about your Bitcoin journey. Maybe if you could just by starting, share the story of how you came out as a Bitcoiner.
Of course. Well, how I got to Bitcoin or how I came out as a Bitcoin?
Yeah, I guess. Maybe how you got to Bitcoin.
Yeah, how I got to Bitcoin. I mean, like most people, I heard about it. I said most people, when you first hear about Bitcoin, you dismiss it. And that was back in 2011 or so when I heard, I think it was about 2011, when I heard that WikiLeaks was not accepting, couldn't accept Visa or MasterCard payments, but they were only accepting Bitcoin. And I think that's where I first heard it. And it was talked by a couple of other friends. They were talking about, oh, in 2012, will it go to 100? What is this Bitcoin? And yeah, I was just, it didn't really go much further than just talking about it, and that was it. Then completely went out of my radar for a few years until 2017, beginning of 2017. I remember I was actually a bit of a Reddit subscriber, not really much anymore because of its bias. And I saw that the subreddit, Bitcoin, was always popping up on the main Reddit homepage. And it was always that roller coaster meme with that roller coaster guy always going up. And I was like, that's funny. Then I get a call from one of my best friends, and he's like, hey, Philip, have you heard about Bitcoin? I was like, yeah. I was like, well, you should get into it. I was like, why? Well, it's a good bet. It's like an inflation hedge. I was like, that's interesting. And given I was already into finance and I was working finance at that point for about just over a decade in traditional finance, I thought I kind of knew, understood finance well, but didn't really fully understand it until I was introduced to Bitcoin. I bought Bitcoin 2017 thanks to my friend, but I was distracted by other altcoins, shit coins. And because that was also an offer on Coinbase, there was other things available. So I was like, I asked my friend, what about those guys? And they're like, oh, they're interesting too. I was like, well, should I buy them? Yeah, why not? His understanding of Bitcoin was also not as acute then as it is now. Then fast forward to about 2020, that's when the world went into a crazy period of time with the COVID so-called pandemic, and our jobs, my job was, went online, and I was sitting at home just thinking, what the hell is going on? This is crazy. I saw the stimulus being pumped into the markets. I saw quantitative easing being ramped up big time, and I started questioning the system. I thought, this is really, really, really crazy. What's going on here? And I always was during the last four or five, that was 2017 to 2020, of those 5 years, always kept on stacking Bitcoin, but maybe not as much as I should have. But I still had Bitcoin, and I realized, okay, maybe I should study more about Bitcoin. So I studied more and realized, oh my God, this is really something special. I joined Bitcoin Twitter. I started reading books like The Bitcoin Standard, like Gigi's 21 Lesson, I think was a book later, I picked up later on, The Price of Tomorrow. And I started reading articles. It just hit me. And I was like, wow, this, I'm really going to get into this more. And I really realized that it was all about Bitcoin. I sold all my old coins and went straight into Bitcoin. And that was around 2020, at the beginning of 2021. And then by the end of 2021, I was like, I want to be working in Bitcoin. I was still working for the financial company that was based in London, but I was working in Serbia. I moved in 2020 because my job went online. I thought it was a good time to move to Serbia because I could do my work anywhere. And I told my work, when times go back to normal, which I never did really, but when the offices opened up, I will go back to London, maybe spend 50% of my time in London and the other 50% in Serbia. The offices opened. I stayed in Belgrade. I get a call a few months later and they're like, are you going to come back to London anytime? I was like, no, I'm pretty good here. Oh, well, you know, we kind of need you back in London. Okay, I'll work on it. And then a few months went off after that. I decided that I really wanted to get into Bitcoin, but I didn't know how. And then one thing led to another. My wife and I, when we moved here, we were very active, like on our socials. We were touring the country a lot. We were really trying to raise the profile of the dynasty. And at the same time, that was my understanding of Bitcoin got greater and greater. And I realized that both of them actually go quite hand in hand to some extent. And next thing we know, we're on Serbia's biggest talk show. And that was in the beginning of 2022. And we got to meet the host about a week before a few days before the recording. And we got to know each other and he found out that I was into Bitcoin. And then during the recording of the show, he was asking me about my work. And then I was talking very boringly about my work. And then he then interrupted me and said, is now a good time to talk about crypto? And that's what triggered me to say, oh yeah, it's not about crypto, it's all about Bitcoin. And I went on about a 2-minute rant about Bitcoin. And then that went viral. And the next thing I know, I'm being invited to different podcasts. The first podcast I ever got recorded with on a Bitcoin podcast was actually Daniel Prince's Once Bitten podcast. Next thing I know, I was on Safedean's podcast, which was my head was blown because it was like I was listening to these guys' podcasts before. And like I was like, you know, like a little fan, you know, fan of these guys, reading their books, their tweets and stuff. And next thing I know, I'm on that podcast. And the next thing I know, I'm invited to Miami 2022. Next thing I know, I'm speaking to these guys in real life. And next thing I know, I'm on stage with Samson and Stacey Herbert talking about nation state adoption of Bitcoin. And next thing I know, Samson then offers me a job at Dan 3. And I'm like, yes. I didn't really think about it twice. And then by the end of 2022, I transitioned out of my job in London and now became I joined Dan 3 full time.
Very cool. It's amazing how many Bitcoiners share the same origin story. It's the same for me. I've been working in traditional finance and had been aware of inflation, all these things you think you understand. And it was really 2020 and the QE infinity, sort of the senselessness of it that really started me questioning, you know, all of these sort of fundamental things that I thought I understood about how money worked and what is the point of money. And
it's, yeah, sorry, I had to pop the button, but yeah, it's crazy. Like a lot of us in TradFi before, you're not taught how money works. You're taught and you go into finance and you understand how the current fiat system works, depending on what area of finance that you're in. But actually the underlying mechanisms of finance, which is money itself, is still a mystery to a lot of traditional finance people. And it would have been a mystery today to me had I not had the COVID, craziness of COVID not tickle my curiosity to study more about Bitcoin. I mean, I knew that Bitcoin was always something about that would be something great for the future. And I thought I was very much not into it big time to study it so much, but I was really invested in it, but not to the maximum stage. And it really, once you get it, you can't look back.
You know, I think it's sometimes think of it like those hypnotic images from the 90s where you would have to unfocus your eyes and then, you know, bring them back into focus and it would bring a three-dimensional image out of the
magic eye. Yeah. Those things. Yeah. Those, that's so true.
Yeah. Once you've seen it, you know, it's there.
You kind of see it. Yeah.
So you've now come out on sort of national TV in Serbia. And what was the reaction of your broader family beyond your wife? And, how did that go?
Well, they knew I was in Bitcoin before that. And as I go, as I got in, because when I got into Bitcoin, you become a bit of like an evangelist, you know, you become very outspoken about it. I was rubbing up against someone the wrong way about that. You know, I was talking about how the current system is about to crash. It's all false. The incentive structure is reversed. You know, we need to go to hard money. We need to separate money from state, you know, the whole thing. And I was preaching, and I kind of pissed them off a little bit. But some of them own Bitcoin, some of them don't, because they're probably a bit, you know, they're a bit older. They're just like, you know, good for you, Philip. But so my family are not quite to the understanding that I am, but they support my journey, they support my vision, but they're not quite into it like I am.
You know, so you mentioned the term separating money and state, which I think is a critical development for the future of human civilization, but might not be an idea that is widely popular among different royal families around the globe. Maybe could you share your thoughts around the importance of private property rights in society and how Bitcoin might contribute to solving this problem?
Well, private property rights, strong private property rights are foundational, are crucial for a civilization to prosper, to develop, to grow. That is the underlying mechanism how civilizations grow, is having strong private property rights that allow you to save or allow you to grow. So in instance, like with Bitcoin, it allows you to hold onto something that's not going to be arbitrarily debased by a different force. Therefore, you're able to save in something that's gonna gain value over time. That gives you security, gives you stability, and therefore you yourself, you can focus on then reinvesting yourself, creating a family, reinvesting in your family, reinvesting in your community, and therefore you're going to create these ripple effects where society then benefits from individuals having their properties being protected. And this is something that's quite tied into monarchy. How monarchy became the predominant governance model before the First World War for many centuries, is that the monarch was a good monarch would understand a good monarch would actually have strong will enforce strong individual private property rights, because otherwise, if he doesn't do that, then his position as a monarch wouldn't last very long. He has to make sure not to take too much from his population today to leave enough for his future generations, for millennia to come. So that's why taxation and property rights were very strong pre-First World War. This is something that we weren't really taught, and we were told a different story. Yes, there was instances where some kings took a little bit more than they should, but in those cases, that was corrected by them being disposed of, or new power structures being put in place. So this is why strong individual property, private property rights is foundational to civilization prospering, because it allows us to work on our families, and it benefits our communities.
And, I think, you know, to your point about the period of time just prior to the First World War, you really see the evidence across Europe. The most brilliant architectural masterpieces are all the products of these times when money worked better. You know, all the 100 years before World War I, inflation was sort of minimal compared to what we've experienced since then, this sort of central banking era. And you see everywhere, like these incredible, you know, like the Hungarian Parliament in Budapest, these just masterwork buildings that we struggle to build stuff like that even now because of the drain on how fiat money leaks.
Well, you can see, like, for one example, where I'm living right now in Belgrade, my home country, is you draw a line between the architecture of pre-World War, post-World War, and that's Second World War, because pre-Second World War was known was the era of the Kingdom of Yugoslavia. So that's where my grandfather, great-grandfather, reigned in Yugoslavia, and that was also characteristic of the gold standard as well. So there was a lot more time preferences were lower, and people were better off. They were strong. They had much stronger private property rights. You know that was mirrored in the architecture, that things were built to last back then, and they were built for the times to last the test of time. Then post Second World War was when the introduction of a new governance model, when communism was introduced into Yugoslavia, as it was back then. And architecture post that was purpose built, ugly, no soul, no traditions. The state, the Yugoslav state, were atheist. it was a different focus, and it became much more high time preference, and buildings, you could really see a difference between how the beauty of architecture first world war.
Yeah, it's amazing the ripple effect of the money problem. And architecture is one that's always sort of fascinated me, and it's especially visible in Europe and probably Eastern Europe. I haven't spent nearly as much time on that half of the continent. So it makes me think of, you know, as you were speaking earlier about how a good monarch's role was to sort of respect the property rights and taxation levels. You know, Bitcoin is in a lot of ways providing sort of like this perfect sort of like rulerless form of a step up from that, even, because it's incorruptible in that no one ruler can influence it. It's like an evolution of a system that has been, we've even perfected the human part by taking the people out of it.
Rules, not rulers. And this is one thing where my participation into Bitcoin was always, some people have very much welcomed it, but then they see a monarch, because our monarchy is still not part. We're not officially a monarch at the moment, monarchy. So, but still, I'm advocating that Bitcoin can actually help governance models and help us reach better versions of democracy, or better versions of monarchy, or go back to better versions of monarchy, because I believe that money before was always corruptible, even under the gold standard. And that's gold standard ultimately led to the fiat standard, because gold had to be held by a third party. And when you have to trust a third party to hold your gold, and in return you get pieces of paper, that was to stop the issuer as a treasury to issue more paper than there was reserves, because no one went back to claim their gold at the same time. So humans are humans, and they always like to game the system if it can be gamed. And Bitcoin corrects that. Bitcoin is truth. And I'm an advocate for seeking for better governance models, and that can be better democracy, better monarchy. I mean, those two are the only governance models that technically we should be looking towards. But I believe that Bitcoin is going to correct those, because now we've had 16 years of untouched truth, of truth that cannot be censored, altered, and it can be verified to the block, to the transaction, 16 years. And this is growing, and this is actually going to expose people of the system for what it is, because this is the first time that something cannot be changed, going back in time and going into the future. And this is going to be beautiful in terms of helping to correct governance models over the course of time. I believe in fairness and truth. And I mean, at the end of the day, as I said, not rules, not rulers, but my position is that Bitcoin can help rulers govern with better constraints, and not being able to arbitrarily print money or do anything other than be there as a rule of law, as having very simple laws of what's right and wrong, and being protectors of traditions, of customs, and of religion, and of family values, and let people get on with their lives, and being free, living in the free market. And essentially you can have like an anarcho-capitalistic system with a monarchy as a protector of traditions and family values and customs. That having said that, also, I believe that I think our democratic models can be definitely improved, and we can go all towards something closer to what we have in Switzerland, where there's direct democracy and more decentralized democracy. Democracy was never happening to happen in such big scales that we have today, where democracy, like when you're asking population of more than 100, 200, 300,000 people to vote, then you're going to have a situation where it leads to some sort of mob style rule, where you get a huge uninformed majority being governed by an informed minority. And I think Switzerland does a good job of this, because they have different cantons. Democracy is much more direct. The people, members of parliament, are actually not career politicians. They have jobs, they have lives, they actually understand what it is to work. And their system is that they vote for issues that much more affect their lives, and it's much more representative. And this is something that's missing in many parts of the world, that democracy is just, you have a choice every 4 or 5 years, maybe two choices. You get some referendums here and there, but really at the end of the day, you're not really participating much in how the country is run. And I really believe that with technologies like Bitcoin, not Bitcoin itself, how it will help people and give people something that they can grow their worth over time, but also Bitcoin technology, such as tying it in with something like Nostr. You've got people like working on something like Truevote. I don't know if you heard about Truevote. Brett Morrison. He came up with technology that actually can correct a lot of how votes are counted in an election. He's actually leveraged the Bitcoin and Nostr together to make this technology work. And I think this could be a game changer for democracy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I absolutely think it's crazy that we're still physically counting ballots in a post blockchain world. And I'm not a big, advocate for, I shouldn't say I don't know enough about how we just did an episode with Will from Damas, which was, I'm starting to try and wrap my head around how Nostr actually works. But yes.
Likewise. But I think the issue with, I think ballots, counting ballots on pieces of paper is better than what we have in some parts of the States when they entrust machines that are corruptible, highly centralized, like those Dominion machines. Dominion. Yeah, that's very scary. So that's why that technology has to be decentralized completely. So if you have something like Nostr, and please, you have to understand that my understanding of Nostr is not that great, but my and I'm not very technical, but I think the idea is that if you have something that's uncensorable like Nostr, and that you can actually have your private key as an individual, then you can use that as a way of counting a vote that can be pseudonymous. That it doesn't have to. The people who are organizing the votes know that your vote is being counted or not, and you know if it's being counted or not. But they don't know who voted for who, and so you have that anonymity. Sorry, I can't even speak right now. That's anonymity. And ability to participate in the system without being fear of A, your vote not being counted, and B, a vote being improperly counted or gamed.
Yeah, that's would be a welcome change, I think. Especially, I think over this next 18 months, something like 50% of the voting world is having a major election, counting the one that just happened in the U.S. And so it's a pressing problem that definitely needs to be fixed. How would you say this message of yours in terms of Bitcoin sort of reimagining or reinvigorating monarchies, how has this message been received by members of other royal families? I'm sure you've been spreading the word.
I've been trying to spread the word. We are connected to a lot of royal families around the world, especially in Europe. We're all sort of interlinked, related. I speak about it, but it's not received. Let's say it's received with like, oh yeah, that's interesting, or okay, maybe I'll look into it or something, but it's not really received so openly, because really people are, it's just like anyone else. They're not open to it yet. They're doing well in the system that functions today. It's a little bit like with a lot of these royal families, whether they're part of functioning monarchies or not, quite often or not, they are well off. They have, wealth that they've inherited. And they are doing well in their lives. They have security, they have comfort, and they're doing okay in the system that exists today. So they don't have the drive to understand what Bitcoin was, the need for Bitcoin as other people. So they're more financially privileged. And I think a good article to read about this is Jesse Myers, Why the Yuppie Elite Don't Understand Bitcoin, something along those lines, which is a great article that was written not too long ago, actually. And he describes how the professional elite, and this can also include a lot of the royals, a lot of the young royals today, because they find themselves in a very similar position. They have good education, they have good jobs, a lot of them are working because the governance system is that they're not receiving taxation from the people, so they actually have to go out and get a living, unless you are a monarch that's reigning. You have to go out in the system and make a living, but they're more likely to be from an elite family. Those elite don't have the need to understand Bitcoin like many other people in society who are financially unprivileged, or countries around the world which are financially challenged with a lot of capital constraints, huge inflation issues, fiat at its worst. So you're in Nigeria's, Lebanon's, Venezuela's, Argentina's, well, Argentina's improving. And those countries where people actually have the need for Bitcoin, and Bitcoin is actually saving them right now, this second. So yeah, it's difficult to try and teach other people who don't need Bitcoin about Bitcoin. So then you try and teach them about how Bitcoin can help monarchies, how there's two synergies in Bitcoin that are very much linked to monarchy, and that is what we talked about before, private property. And the other one is also, which is, I guess, is also very linked to private property, is how it lowers your time preference. And that is how the governance model of monarchy actually functions, is its low time preference. If a monarch practices low time preference, his family will, and he teaches his children about low time preference, how to make decisions that last the test of time, how to make good decisions, not rash decisions, and not be so, not living lives of to delay gratification and to be there for the people. He will last much longer. And I mean, the family will last for millennia in their position. And this is what I try to teach people this, how, you know, that we could return back to some monarchical models. But now, thanks to Bitcoin, that can be a reality, because Bitcoin will keep the monarch in check. And the monarch will then keep the society, not only society in check, but keep the laws in check and be the arbiter of right and wrong. Because at the end of the day, I think anarcho-capitalism is great and all, but if without there being law of what is right and wrong, I think crazy things can develop out of that. And so we might lose our direction.
Yeah, you would think that as students of history, monarchs would be acutely aware of the of what tends to happen to monarchy when money gets really messed up. I mean, the French Revolution comes to mind.
Well, the French Revolution is a funny one, because I don't think the French Revolution is actually taught properly in schools. King Louis XVI, his reign, especially as the first half of his reign, was marked as him trying his hardest to reform a lot of aspects of French society, of the government. He actively was trying to change France for the better, because it had become a little bit unequal. So he actually cut the income to many of the noble class that he saw was not doing much to the country. So he cut a lot of their incomes. He was also known for making the grain, so grain that made bread. He privatized the industry and got away from elite control. And that didn't sit well with the elite, because obviously they lost their power. He was also known for being much more open to Protestants, because France was a very heavy Catholic nation, but then they were horrible towards the Protestants, but he was very tolerant towards them. So it was actually not a bad king. He actually tried his hardest, but because of the whole grain issue and the privatization of it, and not price privatization, the making it opening the markets and not being subject to elite control, he had the unlucky situation where then it was followed by years of drought or bad harvest, which meant that grain production was down and the price of bread skyrocketed. And that then added fuel to the anti-monarchy sentiment that was already growing, and that then led to the takedown of the monarchy, really. But that who fueled that propaganda against the monarchy is always the question, because that was when the first flavors of communism came about, and that was the hard left Jacobins were the political party that drove a lot of this anti-monarchy sentiment, were the ones who were pushing for these communist ideology. They were going with the slogan Liberté, Fraternité, Liberté, and Égalité, yes, which basically today translates, which was then adopted by my modern sort of cultural Marxism today as DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And so these ideals were brought about, saying that, yeah, we're going to have much more of an equal society, freer society, and all that. But actually, it just took power away from the monarchs and put them in the power of other elite, and society got even more unequal. And the same thing happened again during the Russian Revolution. Again, French Revolution, Russian Revolution, again, both marked by the move from away from monarchy to communism. And both of them hacking the word revolution to their favor, saying that revolutions are now a communist thing. So I hate to use the word revolution. That's why I think Renaissance is better when we talk about Bitcoin, and Bitcoin's a renaissance to improvement of civilization, to development of civilization. But yes, so I think going back to what you're saying before, is a monarchy is misunderstood for many reasons, because monarchy actually gives societies, nations, more protection from outside influence. And this was taken away after the First World War, when you saw the takedown of many monarchies, or monarchies were softened by their new structures, which were like parliamentary monarchies. So they became attached to democracies. This allowed outside influence to control them much easier. Whereas if you had an absolute monarchy, their whole incentive is to protect their people from outside influence. Otherwise, they won't have a position in the future. So I'm not saying the monarchy is perfect. It's far from it, but it's definitely the lesser of two evils versus democracy. But I think thanks to now Bitcoin, that you can add that element of a trustless system, of a system that is uncorruptible, and that will do huge benefits to any governance model. And I think it will make us move away from people gaming the system, and people start to be able to explore better governance models that we have today. And I think that's when new forms of monarchy and new forms of democracy can come in.
That's a fascinating concept. I wonder, especially, you know, as it's a time in Europe where the euro has sort of performed poorly, and capital controls and the banking system it seems to be heading in the other direction, away from Bitcoin in Europe, where there's more surveillance, more control, more human intervention, where more elitism, I guess, would be.
That's natural with the system, with the democratic republicanism, which is pretty much the common system that we have today, with or without a parliamentary monarchy attached to it. They all have more or less a similar system. Some have better electoral processes than others, like the UK's first past the post is very dated, whereas Germany's, I forget the name of the system, but there's much better representation. You know, there's the popular vote actually counts there, as opposed to the UK, where it's, if you just dig into it, the statistics shows that it's going to maintain the two-party system. But anyway, going back to this, is that with these four-year, five-year cycles, add the money printer to that, and the ability for the current incumbent or president or prime minister to promise, or to try and even the competing one candidate to promise the populace benefits, free lunch or whatever, thanks to the power of managing the money printer, then everything becomes very high time preference. And you end up having, these highly centralized systems end up just corrupting themselves. And you end up having a scenario which we're seeing being played out today all over Europe. You just have to look to places like Romania, where now the so-called far right, but they're not far right, party run by Georgescu. His policies are very right, center to right, but of course now he's been labeled far right. They had a first round of elections recently, and he won outright for the next round, but they cancelled those results. And now Romania's having a democratic crisis. Something similar, you saw that Germany right now is, the government has failed there, and the leader of the party, AfD party, who are, according to the liberal left media, are the neo-Nazis, but actually the policies are also just center of right, are the most popular party at the moment. But the Western liberal system, controlled by the elites who own the money printers, are not liking this. People are starting to wake up and going for those parties that are promising them more protection and have more patriotic policies that protect individuals from the outside forces. And yeah, they just protect individuals from these horrible left policies that are just taking over Europe.
Yeah, I mean, protectionism, I guess, would be a word I would...
Yeah, it's protectionism. But yeah, I'll be careful using, that word. At the end of the day, we were all protectionists a while ago. But now, if you say that, you are deemed selfish and right-wing. I think, no, we have to question what's happening today. We have to question why everyone's having not having such a bad time, why inflation is so high, why democracies are failing to represent their people and all this. So I think, yeah, these words are then charged by the left to work against those people trying to rise up, trying to question the system. So it's a bit of a mess.
Yeah. In some ways, the same thing you were speaking to about, dressing up these sort of like basically communist ideas is something that's been going on for a very long time. And it's in some ways, it's more of that. And this is sort of why I started the conversation with this question about private property rights, because this is something that's kind of become identified as a right leaning thing. And, in a different way to look at it is just to say that people having an ability to plan for the future with certainty is something that benefits everyone. And the property rights are intimately tied to that. Yeah. Strange times to be alive. Can I ask you if you're able to comment on how you would envision Bitcoin's future in Serbia and specifically how you would, you know, if everything went to your, you know, perfect vision, what would that look like?
I think Serbia has a good potential for Bitcoin to flourish here, like any society really. But as once you understand that private property, strong private property rights are foundational for civilization to continue developing, then any society will understand Bitcoin. I think Serbia is poised for that because we have been a monarchy more than a republic or communist over the last millennia. As in Serbia has an understanding of what strong private, what individual sovereignty is, because thanks to our religious backgrounds, that's how Serbia was born on this, was the country Serbia was born a millennium ago, thanks to the Orthodoxy, Christianity, understanding that individuals have to be sovereign and have to be protected. And this is that hard work, that sacrificing now pays off for the future. And this is something that's taught from father to son, like the patriarchy. And that's something that Serbian tradition is very much tied to. Then you introduce something like Bitcoin to this, where finally we can actually practice our individual sovereignty without being influenced by an outside actors or by the state. Then I think Serbia is gonna understand Bitcoin and it's gonna develop quite rapidly. Plus, we have a good tendency for understanding technology and this tech stuff. We have a big tech sector that's growing all the time. A lot of our talent, actually, we still kind of have a big issue of brain drain. A lot of our population leave the country to seek better financial opportunities around the world, and they end up in very technical positions, financial, law, engineering. And they have, you know, Serbs are, you know, they're quite an educated bunch. You know, we have very famous scientists that come out of Serbia, like Tesla, Pupin, and people like that. So we have a very technical mind. And I think this can be leveraged for Bitcoin. We have a lot right now. Actually, there's a lot of good Bitcoin core developers living in Serbia in secret. And I think, you know, we can really leverage this Serbia's talent for improving Bitcoin and how Bitcoin can improve Serbia. So it goes both ways. But I've got to say that also society here are also very cash orientated because of, let's say, since the Second World War, there's been a lot of ups and a lot of downs. We've in the 90s experienced the third highest inflation episode ever in history of mankind. So even though that's happened, people are still very wary of outside influence and the state. So they are not very open to e-commerce. So that's why they're very cash orientated. Even when you order something online here, you pay it by cash on arrival. That's still a big thing over here. People, when you go to the markets, everything's cash. People like to hold cash here. But so they see something like Bitcoin. Quite a lot of people understand Bitcoin here, but maybe not very vocal about it. But a lot of people understand the need for cash. It's the privacy of cash. The cash, ultimately, you hold it. You're the bearer of that instrument. But yes, you got a bit deep. They haven't really digged further into it, and they understand that, you know, what they do understand, but it's subject to a lot of inflation and stuff. So then I'll hold euros and dollars. So a lot of people here like to hold euros on top of dinars. That's our currency right now is Serbian dinars. But their understanding of Bitcoin is just once. I mean, fully understanding Bitcoin is just one step away. A lot of people here will look at Bitcoin. Not a lot of people. Quite a few people will look at Bitcoin and think, ah, that's a little bit too good to be true. That may be something controlled by some foreign power, the CIA, Mossad, or something like that, and it's too good to be true. But once it's understanding that actually, no, it's completely decentralized. No one controls it, and it's a completely trustless system that's based on verification, and for any changes to happen has to be consensus driven and all that, and it's actually the most democratic form of money that's ever existed and all that, then they start to understand. And I'm seeing this happening more and more with a lot of people coming to me and saying, oh, I'm starting to understand Bitcoin more and more now. But when I first came out about it 2.5 years ago, there was some, and you know, anti-sentiment, there was a lot of anti-sentiment, uh, sorry, bad sentiment against that. And then, you know, they thought the prince went crazy and stuff. And then he's a Bitcoiner. He's the Bitcoin prince and stuff. And I still do to some extent have some negativity towards that. But now I think thanks to recent developments in America, like Trump being elected and him using Bitcoin to some extent on his platform and speaking openly about it and talking about Bitcoin strategic reserves and also talking about the right to self-custody and just being very positive towards Bitcoin. And plus, Serbs are much more open to Trump than they were of the Biden administration. We have many more Trump supporters here than Biden or Harris supporters. So that's actually done a lot of good for understanding Bitcoin, that people are, oh, okay, maybe there is something to it. So thanks to Trump, credibility to Bitcoin has gone up. So yeah, I think we're at the start of something big, hopefully in Serbia, that's more people will get into it. And we will start to see it benefiting Serbia overall.
Yeah, I think that if you had to bet on the track record of sound money over time, you're going to end up on the right side of history more often than not.
I think it's great that I don't want to show too much hope in what Trump is going to achieve, but what he's talking about and what he's promising and the whole talk about strategic Bitcoin reserves, I think is very encouraging. And I think that, you know, our goal at Jan 3 is to try and encourage nation states, trying to encourage politicians, presidents to adopt Bitcoin, not because Bitcoin needs them, really Bitcoin doesn't need politicians, but that politicians will need Bitcoin. And thanks to Trump, you're going to start to see more politicians using Bitcoin on their platforms to get elected. Because I think this is why Trump did a 180 on Bitcoin. Thanks to his, to his sons, Eric and what's the tall one called?
Eric's the tall one, I think.
No, they're both taller. What's the youngest one called? Baron. Yeah, Baron. Yeah. They're both, I mean, I don't know if they're fully, they're maximalist, but they get Bitcoin. They understand Bitcoin and they kind of, yeah, they advised Trump to do, a lot of podcasts as well, because obviously their mainstream, Trump's main rhetoric was, you know, was fake news. And he had to also figure out how to get his voice out. And I think he was advised to go which podcast to go on. So that's why he went on Rogue and things like that. And that was thanks to his children, I believe. And I think thanks to his children, he understands Bitcoin or crypto in general, but, you know, probably get, you know, he's not really talking about other cryptos so much, but, he's talking about Bitcoin. But thanks to that, I think the reason for that he's going for it is because there's a big chunk of the population in America actually holds crypto, Bitcoin. I think about 18 million, you're from America, you probably know this, but yeah, I think about 18 million Americans hold Bitcoin or some other crypto. So that's a huge voter base.
Yeah. Actually, I don't actually know the number. I'm from Canada.
Oh, right. Sorry.
No, that's okay. Trump's trying to make Canada part of America.
Yeah,
anyway,
sorry about that. You did say
by the time this show airs, it might actually be.
I'm so sorry about that. You said you were calling him from Western Canada. I'm so sorry.
No, it's no problem. I do wonder, you know, like I've seen this kind of like during 2020 suggested that it was 1 in 7 people in America and Canada owning some Bitcoin or crypto. And what's never added up for me is if I just in my daily life, I definitely don't meet 1 in 7 people that does own some. So, but yeah, 18 million, that number seems pretty reasonable. I think like it's just in general, the political conversation, and it started with this really Robert Kennedy's speech at the Bitcoin conference in Nashville in the summer. To have people really understanding it on a very big stage, talking about it, confers a level of legitimacy that is, I think, signaling a new era for Bitcoin.
It's fantastic. I was just now at Bitcoin MENA conference in Abu Dhabi, and Eric Trump was speaking there. And I got to say, his keynote was fantastic.
Yeah, I watched it. It was excellent.
It was excellent. I mean, there was some things I would do differently, but otherwise, from the son of a president, you know, someone that is directly linked to the president, president-elect, but he'll be in less than a month, he'll be sitting president. That's fantastic. That's great news for us. So as I said, I don't want to put too much hope into this, but you got to start feeling very confident about Bitcoin accelerating its progress more thanks to recent results.
Yeah, 2025 is
Bitcoin's always going to do well. Bitcoin over the long run, but in the shorter run, I think now we've really had a real boost. You know, some afterburners really on our are pushing us in the right direction. So Obviously, I don't want things to develop too quickly because that can also let end to bigger crashes further down the line. But I think this was much needed after a very muted third, was it third? Yeah, third bull run of the 2020-2021 market, which was dampened by things like, well, later on, but which we found out later on, like the SBF, Celsius, and all the whole paper Bitcoin crap. And it basically was that market was had its legitimacy issues and stuff, and because of that I think it was definitely muted. So I think now we are much stronger in the foundations. We have sitting presidents talking about it. We have countries that have adopted it, and we have more countries that are mining it, and we have less chance people gaming the whole paper thing, even though that's still going to be an issue here and there, especially with not knowing exactly how the ETFs are actually running their models. But still, it's much more legitimate now, and we have much more of a more solid foundation. So I think the multiple high, from our low, is going to be much greater than it was last. I personally think it's going to be much greater than the last bull run. So it's going to be good for us.
I agree. 2025 should be a very exciting year.
It will be, yeah.
This has been a ton of fun, and I so appreciate you coming on the show to share some of your ideas and insights. If for anyone who's listening and wants to follow you, we can share your Twitter handle. Is there anywhere else we could forward them to?
Twitter and Jan3.
Okay.
Thank you. And there's Instagram, but mainly Twitter's better.
Very good. All right. And if you're listening and you made it all the way to the end of the episode, I want to thank you as well for tuning in, and we hope to see you again next week.
Thanks, Scott.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Block Reward. We're trying to do something different here, creating accessible conversations meant for people who aren't obsessed with Bitcoin. If you found this episode informative and engaging, hit that subscribe button to make sure you stay updated with future episodes. Your feedback matters. We'd greatly appreciate it if you could take a moment to share your reviews and help us with our goal of creating Bitcoin content that is simple and easy to understand. Bitcoin has an important role to play in the future of finance. It will change the way we save, spend, and invest. Discover why Bitcoin offers a game-changing opportunity for forward-thinking employers by visiting blockrewards.ca. Block Rewards' mission is helping Canadian employers implement strategies for integrating Bitcoin into compensation and benefits. Supercharge your recruitment and retention strategies, and help your team members plan for the rising cost of living by rewarding their work with the hardest money ever invented. Special thanks to our top sponsor, Paramount Employee Benefits Consulting, Canada's only Bitcoin-forward benefits and pension advisory. For more information, find them at paramountbenefits.ca. Big shout out to Podigy, our production team that makes all this possible, and BMX Escape for producing our music. Bitcoin is an expansive and dense topic many people walk away from early. To Bitcoin enthusiasts looking for that podcast they can share with friends, family, and colleagues, one they'll actually listen to, we hope that is us. The content of these conversations is meant to be provided for information purposes only. Nothing here is investment advice. Bitcoin is a big topic. Be sure to do your own research before making any personal financial decisions. Thanks for listening.